Dynamic presentation. And next, we're going to hear from another friend of mine, Garland Nixon. Garland Nixon is a longtime radio broadcaster. Garland Nixon has also, he's been to Venezuela and stood in solidarity with the people of Venezuela against U.S. sanctions and attacks. You can hear him on Pacifica Radio. You can hear him on Sputnik as well. Always great to listen to his program. I'm really honored for all the times I've been able to join you on the Critical Hour. Garland Nixon.
Thank you. Well, I wish I had some kind of chant or something. I feel so left out. But at any rate, first of all, let me say this. I first want to say a word to the National Security State people who are monitoring this conference. I mean, we can't leave them out. No, they're there. We can't overlook these people. They're important. They're an important part of the movement. And I want to thank them. I want to thank them, oddly enough, for raiding the Uhuru movement. Why? Because I never heard of them before. I didn't know who they were. Uhuru, that didn't mean anything to me. And then a few weeks ago, some friends of mine, you may have heard of the Black Alliance for Peace, Jean Mubaraka, they contact me, hey, here's what happened. And I'm like, well, I got to get them on immediately. And I was able to get Chairman O'Malley on my radio show in Los Angeles on KPFK with Dr. Rick Horn, and everyone heard him, and I got great feedback. And once again, just like the Russia sanctions, it boomeranged. They threw it out there, and it came back, wow, bam, right in the forehead. And so I think what we're looking at here is a situation where you look at what's happening, and you're like, well, they're over there, they're arguing with the Iranians, and they're, you know, the Chinese, and the Russians, and everywhere. It's like a person who falls in the water and they can't swim, a dying man in the water, and he's reaching for anything he can to grab on to save himself, because he knows that the situation is dire. I was in the Verizon store the other day, just before I left, and I walked in, and just person who was, not politically motivated by any stretch of the imagination. And we started talking. And what she voiced to me was an understanding and a knowledge that this system has fallen apart, that the leadership of this country isn't. I mean, it sounded like me talking, and this was not a radio talk show host. This was just your average person. So the problem they have is that people are waking up. People are becoming aware. We didn't do that. I didn't do that. You didn't do that. It's obvious. The system is coming apart at the seams, as it naturally would. When you come up with a system that only takes care of a tiny group of elite ruling class people at the top and actually extracts the wealth, it doesn't disregard the others. It extracts the wealth of the others at the expense of the people at the bottom. And what's happening as the empire unravels, you see, the empire would go to Africa and do it. And they would get the gold and whatever they needed. They'd go to South America. You know, and as that grew tougher, now they turn inward. And now there's student loans. And now a student gets out of college at 23 and they have a house payment and no house. And now they're extracting from the inside. They're extracting from everyone and the people inside the empire who actually expected to benefit from empire. They expected, well, I'm on the inside. You know, okay, they're out there doing whatever. I'll just turn my head away. I don't see that. And I get. And I'm not going to ask why I live in Maryland and I can buy apples that are grown an hour away in Westminster orchards for 89 cents a pound, for $1.99 a pound. But I can get bananas that are grown 3,000 miles away for 39 cents a pound, because the empire is taking advantage of the people who grow the bananas. And they maybe have to pay the people here in America who grow them, they got to pay them a little bit more. I'm not going to ask that because I'm benefiting from cheap bananas. And that's what happens inside of the empire. The people expect to be able to benefit from empire, so they just keep their blinders on and they pretend that they don't see anything. And they can't anymore, because now they are being consumed by the empire that went out to the indigenous people around the world and even here and took advantage of them for their cheap labor, whatever. Then they made the error, oh boy, there's lots of cheap labor in China. We'll just go get that. because the Chinese people are inferior to us, and certainly they won't be productive enough to turn their opportunity into advancement. But they did, and now they don't know how to deal with that. And so here we sit in a situation where they're angry. They're raiding. Oh, they're at everybody. We're going after China. We're going after Russia. Oh, well, the Uhuru movement. Well, they're saying that we're screwing up. Let's grab them. They're grabbing in every direction. But it's not going to do them any good. Because the person in the Verizon store who knows nothing about politics can see it. Now, you know, just a real quick background. I'm not going to get into my background a lot. There's all kinds of stuff there. We could go on and on forever. But the one thing I'll say about my background, you know, I was born, I always say when I was born, we were so poor, we thought the people on the welfare were the middle class. You know, they seemed like, man, welfare, man, they got like eating their houses, food and stuff like that. Hey, I thought they were doing pretty good. Something I didn't have, right? But something happened. My dad, third grade education, got a job as a longshoreman. He joined the ILA. He was a member of a union. He was able to make a living. He was able to take care of his family and put a roof. A person with no education and just a struggling background was able to join an organized labor organization. They were able to bring their power together to ensure that the people that were making lots of money gave them their fair share. And I learned about the importance of people who don't have anything binding together. The people at the top, you know, and let me say this, you know, having been around D.C. and having been around centers of power, I realized, because I'd go to these events with all these rich people and all this kind of stuff, and what I realized was this. When I go to those events, there wasn't no Democrats and Republicans there. There wasn't no right and left there. Those people were acutely aware of the issue of economic class. And they were in the same economic class, and that was their priority. Right? But yet, if you're at the bottom of the economic class, and now you want to have a discussion of economic class, well, you're wrong and you're going to upset America. Only the people at the top are able to do that. And we see the results. Now, we're living the results today. So I'll say this. I'm not going to be with so long, but I'll say this. And this is important for me to bring to you. You know, when I was younger, when I first got into radio, I was in this little low-power radio station, you know, 100 watts. And I found a way to fake it and pretend like it was a big radio station, you know. And I would go to these events and have a booth and all of these signs, and people thought it was a real radio station. So I went to this one. And I'm watching these people with, like, book TV stuff, right, from, what was, you know, people that do book TV. I used to watch that all the time. And I see them all crowded around this guy, and I'm like, what's going on there? Maybe it's somebody I could interview. And I go over there, and it clears up, and I see this name tag, Paul Robeson Jr. There's a guy I got to talk to. I didn't know much about him. I didn't know much about social. But I knew Paul Robeson Jr., great man, you know, Paul Robeson, great man. So I go over there. I ask him. I interview him. And fortunately for me, we, you know, things worked out. He says, hey, let's go have a lunch. And we had lunch. He gave me his phone number. He says, call me. When I get back to New York, we'll talk. And fortunately for me, Paul Robeson Jr. became my mentor for years. For years, Paul Robeson Jr. was my mentor. And that colored my vision of politics. And I studied Paul Robeson, and I would advise everyone here who doesn't know about Paul Robeson to study Paul Robeson, because America had to try, the whole West tried to try to write him out of history, because who he was and what he did was so powerful. And I learned so much from Paul Jr., and I remember one of the things that he talked about, activism. And he talked about, you know, working towards things. And what he said was, he said, look, Garland, you got to understand something. He said, movements are about timing. He said, you, whatever you're advocating for, you keep working on it. And when the time is right, when people are ready, when the situation is right, your movement, if you're doing the right thing, will start to take hold. And I think that's what this is about. This is about people who have been for years saying, this system is unfair. This system only takes care of a few. This system is concentrating power. And people wouldn't listen to that. Why? Because they could get bananas for 39 cents a pound. Who cares? I can get bananas for 39 cents a pound. And so the argument in the so-called left here in America was what? The argument was, who gets a bigger slice of the pie? You know, that was the argument in the left here. Hey, do I get a big slice? You got a big, well, these people, right? And the unions, it was, who gets a slice of the pie? Everybody talked about, it's not fair. If we could just get this pie divvied up equally, then everything would work right. But we never had a discussion about all the brown and black bodies that were baked into that pie. Yeah. That's imperialism. Woo! And now, we don't have to have that discussion. Let's be honest about this issue, what's going on in Ukraine. Let's be honest about it. Not a single country in Africa has agreed and is going along with the United States. Outside of the countries that are vassals in Asia, that ain't happening either. How about South America? How about the Caribbean? How about the Middle East? The United States has the nerve to go to Indonesia, Vietnam, Cambodia, all countries that have had genocides at the hands of the United States and say, oh yeah, can you join with us against China? Yes, sirree. We got to stop these Chinese. But when we look at it, what happens? We see that now that the colonial powers that for centuries have abused the rest of the world and have claimed that they were economically, they were socially, they were morally superior to the rest of the world, and that's why they were doing so well, now the reality is coming out. Because there are other options. Now the United States goes to Africa and says, don't do business with the Chinese. And the Africans are like, hey man, it's working out for us. Sorry, we can't help you. Now when I go to Venezuela, and I go way out into the mountains in a little town, and I see this sign, Socialist Village, right? And it's like this big, it was like an apartment complex the size of a small town. And what was it? It was the government building homes for the poor. Yeah. Yep, it's yours. And I go in there and I'm you know, talking to the people, and there's these little women, this tall, little women. And they come up to me, and the vest we had on, you know, had what country we were from, and it had American flag on it. And they looked at me and they said, you go back and you tell the Americans, we will fight for our democracy. Yeah. Right? And I say to myself, you're not defeating that. Because it's in the hearts of the people. And why is it? You put it in the hearts of the people. You oppress these people. They know, they use the word neoliberalism. Oh, why? Because you went to their country. People are like, well, the pink tide, red tide, whatever is going on now. You know what they said to me? They said, well, you call it socialism, whatever. We've been living this way for 10,000 years. This is our way of life. We all look out for each other, right? That's the way they live. So when you go there and you see that these people suffered at the hands of colonialism, and they're saying, never again, you know what I mean? You can do whatever you want, but we ain't going back to that. And the U.S. says, well, we will sanction you, we will do this, only makes them madder. Only thing it does is it pisses them off.
And what it does is it reveals to them even more the evilness of the system that they're against. They're saying, man, you guys are worse than we thought. We knew you were bad economically, but now you're just going to starve us right to death. Well, we know we got to stand up against that. And again, it boomerangs. The more they do to expose themselves, the more that the people of the world see it. And now we have a situation where the people of the world, and see, this is what's upsetting the neocons. You know, I can say the United States, I can use whatever word I want. Neocolonialism, the empire, this stuff didn't just start yesterday. You know, they've been doing this for 100 years. This is, you know, we could go with opium wars, we could go on and on and on, right? This system, they are exposing to people in their desperation just how bad it is. And that makes people look at other options and opportunities. And now the problem they have is that's happening. Russia and China are rising. And let me add this. I think this is important. And in trying to push Russia and China away economically, what they're doing is they're creating a dynamic where it's in the best interest of the Russians and the Chinese to say, well, this is not a market where we can work with people and sell ourselves. So it's in our best interest to help to build up Africa, build up the Middle East, build up to help to work with and build these other parts of the world that were traditionally held down so we can all do business and work together. They are creating a dynamic of their own economic doom. And I'll say this, and I'm not here to say, I hate America, I hate Europe, I hate this, I hate that. I'm here to say this. I know the difference, and I know that there is a difference between the words and symbols we use to refer to something and that thing we're referring to. So when I say America, that's just a word. It's a word. What is America? It's a noun. But the question is, what is it referring to? When I say Europe, what is it referring to? So if I say, well, I love America, what am I referring to when I say America? I can talk about the people, love the people. I can talk about, you see what I'm saying? So in reality, when it comes down to it, it's, yeah, they're like, well, you guys, you hate America. What do you mean when you say America? What are you referring to? It's just a noun. It doesn't mean anything. So ultimately, here's people saying, we love America. If you understand what we're talking about, we're not talking about a small group of wealthy people. We're talking about a group. We're talking about we love, and what we want is a place where my father and anybody else's father with a third grade education can join a union that will give him fair representation so that when Company X or whoever makes whatever this money is out there, that the workers are fairly compensated. We're some evil beings if we just want people to be fairly compensated? That if people, regardless of their color, of their race, or whatever, are able to go out and to express what they want to express, in the way, whether we agree with it or not. You don't have to. Look, first of all, you don't have to have any kind of special laws to protect someone that stands on the street and says, yay, I'm for the Republican or Democratic Party. You need laws to protect someone who says unpopular speech. And that's what we're for. That's what we believe in. So I just say to everyone today, I don't have a lot more, but I say to everyone, it is important to understand history. And again, when I went out to Venezuela, let me tell you something that shocked me. I was about to say it, but I'll say this. Also, I learned so much. I'll go out to these little villages, right? And I saw something that I'm not accustomed to. Because one of the things they do here in an attempt to keep poor people down, to keep black people down, to keep people down, is they don't educate you. They do everything they can to keep you from getting a decent education, keep you ignorant, then you don't know. But I went out to these little villages, and I talked to these people. Their knowledge of history and politics was incredible. And I'm like, wow, you guys really, whoa, you know, and they're going back to Simon Bolivar and such, and they're going on. I'm like, this is incredible. And they said, yeah, that was part of the Chavez movement, was educating people, was giving them history, right, and giving them knowledge to empower them. Because you know what? Because no matter what, if you have knowledge and an understanding of history, you can move forward. You're powerful. You can always build a movement with knowledge, keeping people ignorant and then just feeding them whatever you want to feed them. Forget history. This just happened. Why, the Ukraine thing just started on February 24th. Nothing before that. You don't want to look backwards. And I understood the power in knowledge and the power in empowering people through knowledge, through waking up to the reality around them. And I just feel like that this group and this organization is about that. And I really appreciate what you're doing. And I really appreciate the fact that you took the time out to invite me here, Mr. Common Radio Guy. And last but not least, once again, and we should do this, I thank the national security state, because what they're doing, in the same way, let me say this, in the same way that the millionaires and billionaires, as they grab the money up, you know, during COVID, they took all of this money, oh, well, man, we got it all, but that woke a lot of people up.
Yeah.
Right? That the things that they're doing to grab money and to hold people down and all that, they're smiling, yay, we're getting away with everything. In the short term, you are. You're getting it. But in the long term, you're waking people up. And the national security state, in oppressing people who are trying to express their constitutional rights, in going after the Uhuru movement, who are exercising their constitutional rights. That's a whole other discussion, because I've always said, as Malcolm X, I don't believe that black people are citizens in this country. The whole belief with citizens, that's a long discussion. But the bottom line is, what they're doing in their ham-handed way, they're doing more work to wake people up than we could ever hope for. And I want to thank everybody here. I want to thank the Uhuru Movement. And thank Caleb Maupin.
Right. Well, next we're going to hear another song from our beloved musician, and then we'll go to the next speaker.